So good afternoon, everybody. My name is Yusuf Khalidi. I'm Microsoft. I'm here to tell you, discuss with you, if you will, a hybrid approach to cloud applications. So before we start, tell you a bit of myself. I've been on Microsoft for almost 10 years now. I started Windows Azure with a few other folks way back in the summer of 2006. We've come a long way. We also have had now long experience running this system. And today's topic in particular is about what it means for you to use the cloud while also able to leverage what you have on-premises. And many of our customers, frankly, start with stuff they already have, all of us do, and we want to use the cloud in some capacity with the other. So it's about the so-called hybrid method of running applications between on-premises and the cloud. Now, this is a relatively small room, not many people in the room here, so do stop me with questions. I'll leave time at the end as well, but we can discuss this thing if you will. I'll try not to make this in too deep, but more broad, so we can have a discussion as well. So what should you expect to get out of this session? To be honest, simply two objectives I have here. One is to understand there's a need for these hybrid applications. Not everything you might do with the cloud will be hybrid-oriented, if you will, but there is a need for a class of apps, for a class of scenarios for the hybrid approach. The other one is I'm hoping you would leave the session, if you will, with some methods, some of the tools that we have for you to build hybrid applications. And by the way, I'm using the word build here loosely. It's build, compose, sometimes configure. So it's a combination of these things, as you see in a second. Main takeaways, we do have a bunch of mechanisms here. We don't just give you a base platform with the ability to run a bunch of virtual machines and say, do it yourself. Instead, we have building blocks for you. Building blocks to make it easier to connect on-premises, your traditional data center, to the public cloud, or to connect your private cloud to the public cloud, and to connect to multiple levels, as you see in a second. Another takeaway is really this hybrid app stuff is really a balance between cost, performance, and time to market, and a bunch of other things as well. Frankly, if you had the choice to put everything in the public cloud and write them all from scratch and the like, do so. It's better than having to mix and match. But reality is more complex than that. And as you'll see, sometimes all of us have stuff on premises, typically data, lots of data that's being used by other applications. And try to sort of split them in a funky way may be difficult. So what do you do? Thirdly, there are specific requirements you may have. And typically, it all boils down to budget. We'll dictate a solution here. So the best technical solution may be a rewrite, but the realistic solution, the real solution, would be a hybrid solution. Quickly, what the agenda is, I'll try to motivate the problem more, give you a definition, so we all know, we'll talk about the same thing. Then I want to go through four or five technologies, services that we have today in Windows Azure. They're available for you today. They're optional. You can mix and match to solve a particular problem you may have. Then I'll show you specific case studies, a couple of detailed ones from our own IT department, Microsoft IT department, which is a big customer of me, of mine, if you will, in which they were faced with big, large, classical on-premises applications and how they moved them partway to the cloud. I'll also mention some third-party customer case studies as well, and some of the feedback we got and how we're solving it going forward. So I'll give you some background, specific mechanisms, then show you how some folks in IT use the mechanisms, okay? For the public cloud stuff, I'm pretty sure you guys have been hearing a lot about this, what the public cloud is good for and so forth. This particular slide shows what Gartner in particular, one analyst of Gartner thinks, if you will. And just a way to give you a bit of background here. There are people try to figure out what this public cloud is good for anyway. So here's a given, if you will, segmentation or categorization, if you will. One, on your left-hand side, there are typical sort of new, high scalable web applications. Many, if you will, the Web 2.0, or whatever it is called nowadays, apps, fall in those categories. They require high scale, they're really growing, and more things are needed. And You may have seen the Pottermore example, for example, the Harry Potter website, which is a huge website. It runs on Azure. It's a classical example which fits in that category. You need a public cloud for that. You're expecting traffic, you have no idea how much you're expecting, put in the cloud, it will work. Another category is really pretty much, so if you will, custom apps, line of business apps, where you may have some predictability in the traffic. You know, for example, it's busy maybe twice a year. The case study I'll show you from Microsoft itself internally is just like that. An app that we know it's very busy twice a year during performance reviews. The rest of the year, you need it, but not much capacity. Third category here is basically e-commerce, websites that, again, may have seasonality. If you're running a shop, maybe something around Christmas is busy. If you're running a tax business, April is your busy month and so forth. Then you have, of course, test and development. Actually, some of our first customers who use Azure very much fill in that category. You can do quite a bit for test and development cycle, nightly builds and the like on a platform like Azure. Or for that matter, any public cloud. This slide is very generic. Of course, the cloud stuff is useful for disaster recovery. Backup. You can back up your data. You can back up your have a place to run your VMs as well. And this morning, I gave a talk on this subject. If you're interested, it's on the website, TechEd website. Lastly, of course, this whole notion of batch processing, big number crunching. Wall Street uses the public cloud for this quite a bit. High-performance computing. You may have heard of cases where we have a customer who needs 1,000 VMs by morning. You know, what do you do? The cloud is good for this stuff. Anyway, this is sort of generic. It's about the public cloud. Key here is that, if you see that last line at the end, whether you're using IaaS VMs, PaaS, roles, mixing and matching, it's really more or less independent of the discussion we're going to have today. In other words, you may be writing new code in a PaaS environment. You may be bringing old code in an IaaS environment. You may be mixing and matching. Much of the issues we'll discuss now have to do with where these entities live and should they be on-premise or the cloud. So they're not quite orthogonal, but you can do this thing with old code or new code, so I'm trying to tell you. Okay? Now, as I said, if you're doing something from scratch and some of the constraints you may have with your stuff not there for on-premise stuff, go to the public cloud. That's where you get the scale. You don't have to do anything on-premises and the like. But we all know we have different requirements here where we have to do stuff on-premises. So what's this thing about hybrid? In a nutshell, we're talking about something that spans the spectrum. Applications that span the spectrum from traditional systems that many of us, if you will, grew up learning computing on. This could be anything from Windows-based systems, Unix, Linux, mainframes, I don't really care. Stuff on-premises, typically. You may have them hosted somewhere else, but still, they're classical systems built for an application. All the way to the public cloud by way of the private cloud, if you want, the virtualization step in the middle. This is high level, guys. In the middle, you can have virtualization, you have private cloud, you have automation, et cetera. The point is this. A hybrid app, by definition, if you will, is something that spans part of the on-premise, the first two boxes on your left, all the way to the public cloud. And it's an application that may have some dependencies back on-premises. And typically, the dependencies, as you'll see example after example, have to do with data, especially if you spent years building data or you have data on-premises that other apps on-premises need as well. Okay? So how do you go about this? First of all, how do you know if you have this issue to solve and how do you go solve it? Key to this is this fancy term application portfolio management. Basically, look at everything you have in your plate. You're going to have a bunch of apps probably that fall in multiple categories. I have different requirements. In any, frankly, IT shop, you typically have a bunch of issues to deal with. Here's some of them. You have to ask yourself for a given application or mix of applications, how relevant are they to the business? Do you want to invest in them? Do you want to just keep them where they are? Do you want to evolve them or not? The performance of the app or the components of the app. Do you have very chatty systems? And frankly, guys, physics is physics. So if you have a very chatty system, either make it less chatty or keep them together. Keep them on premises or in a private cloud or a public cloud. So you have to know how to slice and dice these things. How mature is that? You know, sometimes you have a very mature system, frankly, you may not have the source code for, or you have no idea where you bought it from. You probably just leave it alone, frankly. Others, it may be time to reinvent, if you will. A big one has to do with compliance, regulations, business rules. Your CIO saying, this stuff has to be here versus there. This is not necessarily technical, but this is like regulations, like sometimes geopolitical reasons why you have to be in certain geographies. And again, despite what I might tell you about the public cloud and the goodness of the public cloud, let me imply that some part has to stay within lock and key, your lock and key. How do you extend it to the public cloud? You need a hybrid solution. Sometimes apps, as you know, go through these phases where it's time to do something to them. You need new functionality, you need a new version. You want to go and fix some problems. These are typically good times to re-architect the boundaries. And actually, the example I'll give you from the Microsoft IT department was one of those things. It was time to change things, let's add new boundaries and extend them. Lastly, this may sound boring, but how do refresh cycles affect a lot of this? If your business sunk millions into some piece of hardware on premises, you probably don't want to go to your CIO and say, hey, I want to buy new machines or new capacity in the public cloud. You want them to depreciate out. So you want them to run their course. Meanwhile, you want to do something else, so you end up with a hybrid solution. For all of these, I'm sure you have others as well, you will end up saying, okay, fine, I'll keep some stuff off-premises, but I'm going to expand to the cloud. I'm going to add value in the cloud, I'll add maybe the front end to the cloud, do the bursting to the cloud, and so forth. So how do I do that? Just to set the stage a bit as well, you know about the public cloud, right? We've been talking about Azure and what have you for the last 2 days. This is the big, large-scale system. As I mentioned, this has been under development in Microsoft since summer 2006. We had our first beta 2008, in production a year and a half or so after that. We've been running with full SLA and the like for the last couple of years. Very large-scale, we run in 8 data centers across the globe. The development tools use it and so forth. And of course, we have the private cloud. And there's a place for a private cloud, clearly, for many of the reasons I mentioned earlier as well, where you want to keep pieces to have on-premises or leverage existing hardware. The trick really is this for you, is if you invest in this stack, you know, how much can you leverage across them? And you know, we have these 4 broad areas that we are consciously making sure that they're very much the same across the spectrum, very similar, if you will. If you invest in them, the skills and talents and the code effectively flows across the spectrum. One, of course, is identity. And specifically, for AD, we have many solutions, particularly starting this week, frankly, with our new releases, where you can extend AD to the cloud. I mean, I'll show you a slide or so on this in a second, but the point is there are multiple ways you can take your existing AD infrastructure and project it to the public cloud. And there are multiple ways, but you can EDFS on-premises, you can use VNet to build there's a bunch of ways you can do these things. But this is really key. Identity, as we all know, is very important for our businesses. Single sign-on scenarios, group policy controls, and so forth. Another area which is quite common, which is common really across our spectrum, is virtualization. If you know how to construct VHDs, if you understand our virtualization stack, it's the same thing across the spectrum. Take the cartoon that displayed in front of you, the grain of salt, of course. It's not as easy as just taking a VM and just running it anywhere. There are dependencies for a VM and so forth. But if you resolve these things, you have a lot of flexibility to go back and forth across the spectrum. Management, very important, of course. None of this stuff is just run a website and be done with it. You have to actually manage across that spectrum. Actually, guys, it becomes a bit more difficult this way. You now have stuff across your private cloud, perhaps, and your public cloud. How do you manage it? And I'll show you examples where you can use System Center to actually be the tool, the portal across the spectrum. And by the way, for many of these things, you can actually write your own, but we have things for you. And lastly, and very, very importantly, development. We are really investing in this, guys. I mean, this conference will give you a glimpse of it. Just look at the tooling. All the tooling we're doing for Visual Studio and increasingly for third party like Eclipse. The idea is that make the ability to write code that can either land on your private cloud or public cloud really easy. You're going to see more and more examples of us where it's really trivial. Sometimes configuration settings changes, sometimes a bit more work. But this is important. It's important for the ISVs in the room and for the rest of us who need ISVs to write applications for us and components for us. So having an ecosystem that's as uniform as possible across the spectrum is really key. And frankly, guys, from a strategy perspective, it's key to our strategy, because we believe in this continuum between on-premises and the cloud. So let's talk about technologies now. We have a number of technologies. I'm going to list them in a second, then go through each one in a slide or two, that are available to you. Each one is actually optional. And if you are buying it from us, you buy it a la carte, basically. So you can mix and match. And some solution will require one or more of these services to be put together. So I'll go through the services now, the building blocks, if you will. Then I'll show you how people have put them together to build solutions. Okay? At the lowest level is the virtual network. This is the ability to carve part of the public cloud and make it part of your on-premises network. It's basically VPN on steroids. So you can take part of your on-premises network, your local IP address range, your private IP address range, and so forth, and you can extend it securely as part of Windows Azure. If you haven't seen how this thing is done, unfortunately, the organizers of the event scheduled at this very moment a talk just about that one. So we have a sequencing problem. You can see it online, or come tomorrow for a TLC down there. We'll show a demo. Literally in minutes, we can create you part of the cloud to be part of your on-premises private network, basically. And for any IT pros in the room, networking perspective, the concepts are very much networking concepts. Above that, we also have a mechanism which we had for a while, which is more aimed at developers, that also allows you to take any machine, and particularly like a laptop or a developing machine, and securely join it to services running in the cloud. It's great for developer scenarios. Above that, we also have a service called Service Bus, and I have many slides which touches on Service Bus, and there have been at least two talks on Service Bus, by the way, during the event. Service Bus is a messaging and connectivity solution for applications. And the best way I can describe it is you may have application running on-premises, and you want to be able to rendezvous in the cloud or get it from the cloud or vice versa. Service Bus is a great way to communicate that way. I'll show you more about it in a second. Next, data. Data is a big deal, of course. So you'll find out you're going to have cases where you have SQL data on-premises that you want to synchronize with the SQL in the cloud, or vice versa, or split them one way or the other. So we have a service called SQL Azure Sync that helps you do the synchronization. I can do it for backup scenarios, for having multiple copies, for performance, and so forth. Again, I'll show you how the whole these things being used in a second. Lastly, we have System Center, of course, multiple modules, parts of System Center that can be used to manage across the spectrum. Okay. Again, guys, all these are optional. You can ignore them all. You can combine them, mix and match them as the case may be. Let me start with the next to last slide, then tell you about the virtual network, and then go up the stack. So the most basic one, which we had for a while, is currently still in beta, I think, CTP. It's called Windows Azure Connect. It's very much aimed at developers. You install an agent on your local development box or boxes. You exchange some secrets, and you can join basically you are basically part of the network which is running in the cloud. It's very easy to set up. You can do it just like right now. It's very easy to manage as well. And the picture is in the end very simple. You have a bunch of machines somewhere. It could be in this physical room right now. It could be your on-premises network, like the picture says on-premises machines. And you can effectively link them in a private network with virtual machines or roles running in the public cloud. It's very flexible, by the way. You can mix and match and do a bunch of things as well. And again, the best way to use this thing is for development purposes. Actually, I'll show you examples where people have done this thing for production as well. But for production, the intended mechanism is this mechanism, the next one, which is the virtual network. The Windows Azure Virtual Network is truly a VPN-based solution. We support on-premises, whatever you may have, existing VPN devices. If you go to the portal right now, you'll see the current list of Cisco, Juniper boxes that we support and help you configure. So if you're not an IT pro or a network pro in this room, you basically, to use the solution, you have to go to your networking professional and ask them to create you a virtual network in a public lot. Do some magic to the portal, which is basically figure out which IP addresses, configure your local VPN device to talk to it. And now you have a network or a set of networks in the cloud that are joined network-wise to your local network. Using this, by the way, you'll see in a second, you can have AD extended to the cloud, you can have system management and support to the cloud as well. What's CMG? Specific question, do they support Forefront as a gateway on premises? No, actually, the current list actually has a bunch of hardware devices. Technically speaking, we not a big deal, to be honest. I mean, technically, it has to be Ike V1 and some other protocols. We will extend the list. We limited the list at the moment to half a dozen VPN box lines for ease of management. So if you go to the portal and say configure, you get a script that's based to your device, which you should inspect and then go to your networking professional and merge it if you want. In the future, we'll add the list. Okay. And by the way, we work with all these vendors to make sure they work and so forth. A bit of details, and again, there's a whole talk about this thing sometime during this session, this event. We actually stand up a gateway in the cloud on your behalf when you set this thing up. You can configure it as well. It's a bunch of VMs. And otherwise, it's really a network that looks and feels and smells like a local network. Okay? Now, truth in advertising, latency and physics laws cannot be defeated. So you still have a latency issue, of course. So please don't run an application that requires a half a millisecond communication latency. But for many apps, do be just happy with this stuff. Some scenarios. In principle, it's really key to build at the network level, at the lowest possible, this hybrid private-public network between on-premises and the cloud. It really makes your subnets really in the cloud part of your local network. Some scenarios, you can do it for AD. DNS, so you can basically use your local on-premises AD and DNS for your assets in the cloud. So if you took a bunch of VMs from on-premises, run them in the cloud, with the virtual network, they just talk to your local AD and DNS. Another one is for management, for example. You may have scripts, you may have tooling, you may have applications that assumes that they are running on the same network as the application they are managing. With this, it's almost like magic, to be honest, guys. The network is extended to the cloud, and the tooling will just work. The mechanism is flexible, actually. So some folks have been trying to use it already in the week or so have been out in a very complex and complicated ways. And we seek your feedback. It's currently in beta, CTP, and we have time if we have to add features or modify it, as the case may be. Here's an example how you might use this. And this is abstract, but this stuff actually works. In this picture, in your left-hand side, you have on-premises. And this is an example of basically taking an intranet-facing SharePoint, running it in the cloud. So you may have an intranet within your company SharePoint system, and you want to offload that part to the public cloud, yet keep on-premises the bulk of your AD, DNS, and so forth. In this particular example, your employees are accessing it through the public internet. And it's basically a single sign-on scenario as well. So on the right-hand side, in the cloud, you basically have a VNet, a virtual network, that's joined to your on-premises system through, again, the configuration through your local VPN device. So left-hand side, you have a VPN device, one of the support devices we have, and as I said, there are many of them. On the right-hand side, we stand up for you automatically a gateway. It's actually two VMs for failover and availability. The gateway is configured automatically through all the APIs in the portal we have. and it securely connects back to your VPN device. And you have to give us the credentials, of course. From there on, in this particular example, they happen to have a bunch of SharePoints running in VMs, talking to SQL running in a bunch of VMs as well. And in this example, the actual traffic from the customers is coming through a public internet, whereas any AD synchronization backup, DNS lookups and the like are going through the private network. Other options are possible, guys. Now, there are some limitations still with this version, which again, offline will show the documentation. But this picture is to give you a flavor how you can compose these things. And it's driven directly by the experience of people who have been using our initial implementation of Connect and the needs for the enterprise, if you will. Okay. Another mechanism we have, another service we have, is Service Bus. Service Bus is a messaging system. It gives you basically three things, those sort of yellowish boxes out there. One is gives you queues or for occasionally connected devices. We have many customers, I mentioned two of them, that use Service Bus where the clients are mostly phones, tablets, laptops that may or may not be connected to the internet at any given point of time. So you can just deposit messaging in the Service Bus, and when they connect, they pick it up, and vice versa. So one mechanism, again, are messaging with queuing for disconnected operations. It's like a very common scenario. Another one is basically for like a network overlay for application level connectivity. It acts like a relay between on-premises and the cloud. And again, I'll show you specific examples, but using this thing, you can go punch through firewalls and the like at the application level. So you can combine this with VNet. You can use it instead of VNet in certain scenarios. The option is yours. If you purely have an application set with a bunch of, say, WCF interfaces, Service Bus is just nice. It just works. You don't need a virtual network underneath it. The third set of mechanisms are you have basically a pub-sub mechanism. You have topics and subscriptions, and you can use them as a publication and subscription mechanism. So you may have a bunch of clients. Again, they could be on-premises or on the cloud that publish events, and others can subscribe to those events. And it's durable, of course. It's a very flexible tool, and you'll see examples in a second how you can use it to inject it between your on-premises assets and stuff you put in the cloud. And again, as I mentioned, there are at least two or three sessions at TechEd going through scenarios for Service Bus. Shifting to data synchronization, you'll see that when you want to go and tackle any hybrid aspect, any hybrid migration, if you will, data is going to be a big deal. In many cases, the biggest deal, to be honest. So we have a service, it's called a SQL Data Sync, that has multiple uses, but effectively it gives you either one-way or two-way synchronization between SQL instances. It could be the SQL, the service we have, SQL Azure, it could be SQL instances in VMs, could be on-premises, could be in the cloud, basically any combination between them. And it's, again, many cases you find out that you may be able to put your SQL data in the cloud, but you want to keep the primary or the main copy on-premises. You want to maybe back it up the other way around. And by the way, Sync has other applications too. You can even use it between cloud to cloud and for high-performance scenarios. For example, you may want to synchronize between different copies in the cloud and use one as a primary one for read-only traffic. It's also usable for that. Again, I'll show you how it's being used as we speak. I'll shift a bit to management, System Center, then I'll show you examples of how people have been using all these things together. So System Center has a bunch of extensions, a bunch of modules you can use with Windows Azure. So with App Controller, which is part of System Center, you can use it to manage subscriptions in Windows Azure. As you may know, Windows Azure subscriptions are so simple at the moment. You get them, you go to a portal, you get some subscription and the like. If you want to manage applications by multiple people in your IT department, you may want to use something like System Center to help you manage all the subscriptions across accounts and with some basic role-based access control, basically. So the way it works is you get the normal credentials from the portal for Windows Azure. You figure the money thing, you get the keys. It maintains the actual keys to the kingdom, if you want, or all the accounts you have in Azure. And from there on, it gives you a holistic view across all your accounts in Windows Azure. In addition, it gives you effectively role-based access control of your people with integration with ED for those resources. Okay? And this is just a V1 of this. We can do more of this, but this is sort of very useful. It has been a very common ask we've been getting. Because frankly, our main portal doesn't have that many roles in there. This gives you a more final control over who in your department or your company can use Azure. Another use of System Center has to do with Operation Manager. You can use Ops Manager to monitor applications that span on-premise in the cloud, the so-called hybrid apps we're talking about today. So again, very similar. It can get the credentials from you, from your Azure system, using the public APIs. Everything, by the way, is built using public APIs here. So if you have time, you can do the same thing yourself. It gets the information about your accounts, about your applications, and all the logging information that we generate, and any mom packs you may have put to the application in the cloud. And at the end, it gives you a holistic view of all your application. So in this simple graphic, it's an actual snapshot of a picture. This is an app that spans the whole spectrum. The left-hand side is running on-premises. The right-hand side is running on Azure. There are mount packs over the whole thing, and you effectively get the whole picture here. So if I had a demo, I would show you. You may get a red X saying something's wrong with this app. You can drill down to the component that's running this part of the cloud versus this piece of on-premises and so forth. Okay. Lastly, you can also use System Center. This is back to App Controller here. A way to manage applications across all your clouds, if you will. And you can plug in your private cloud underneath this thing, local machines, if you will, through VMM, and the public cloud as well. So this gives you a glimpse of what we're doing with System Center as a single pane of glass to manage across this spectrum. And as I mentioned, I will repeat here, it's actually built over the same public APIs that documented for anybody else to do. So third parties are starting to do the same thing. You can script it yourself. You can use PowerShell, whatever you want. OK, enough of the plumbing. Let's talk about how actually people have been using this stuff. OK? And what I will show you is a couple of case studies that MSIT has been using. MSIT is Microsoft IT department. And they're an IT department, to be honest, like any other IT department, except part of the charter is also to test and dog food the platform, all our platforms. So they have to support us in the usual things IT have to do, plus they have to use our stuff. So, and they are as critical as any other customer, by the way. So there's an app called Performance. Any Microsoft employees in the room know about Performance. Twice a year in Microsoft, we have to go through performance evaluations, like many of us in the room. We do it exactly twice, sometime after Christmas and literally as we speak this month. During these two times, the usage really peaks up. So classically, MSIT had this big application. This is how classically it looked like. It took 80 plus man years of engineering work. It has always been sized hardware-wise for peak, of course. Nobody would accept that when the deadline comes in July or August that the tool is slow or not working. So it's always been sized to the peak. It always have been a large investment in this hardware because of the peak, and as I mentioned, the load is very predictable. We know for a fact, right after Christmas, sometime in January, February, sometime July, August, the peak really goes up. Briefly, how the app looks like. You know, if you look at it, you probably have something very similar. Lots of data in SQL. You have a bunch of middleware services, if you will, that does also things for over the data and for the logic, the business logic, and lots of front ends as well, actual websites and a bunch of services as well. Not surprisingly, it's built out of Microsoft technologies, very scalable system. And do note the right-hand side corner. It, of course, speaks to enterprise ERP systems. We have SAP within Microsoft, high-end SAP systems. I assure you, we're not going to move SAP to the public cloud. So by definition, if you want to move some of this thing to the cloud, it has to be some of it, because you want to be able to still talk to your local stores. So the goal was, try Windows Azure, but B, they were at a point where they needed to add more functionality, in particular for the front end and the business logic. So they had an opportunity to do something with the application. So what they did was they basically took much of the front end and some of the business logic and moved it up to the cloud. So in this picture, what it shows as Windows Azure, including SQL Azure, these are in the public cloud, running in the same public cloud that you may run on, by the way. There's no special place for MSIT. The bottom part is still within the corporate network. So the connectors to SAP are still on-premises. The main data store is still on-premises. And a bunch of services are still on-premises, but everything else moved up to the cloud. And then the question is, how do you connect them, of course? So these are the connection points here. On the left-hand side, you have DevView's Azure Connect. This is the mechanism they had at that time, because they did not have the virtual network yet, to connect to the data sources, to SQL, basically. And their main feedback was, it worked, but they wanted a virtual network. That's why we built a VPN solution. And then they used Service Bus extensively between the components of the application. And many of the underlying, I'll show you a slide in a second, many underlying services basically were not changed for Service Bus to connect to them as well. And the use of Service Bus was precisely, now on-premises you have local calls, usual stuff on-premises, okay? Nothing changed there. But then with Service Bus, you basically can export all these endpoints that are effectively an export of the local endpoints you have on-premises, your WCF interfaces. In some cases, they had to write a small shim on-premises to export them as WCF front-end. But once you have the server front-end out there, you can securely export them into the cloud. And when I say securely, you decide exactly who can get to them per endpoint, if you want. So in this system, by the way, this is how it's running, has been running for a while now. The back-end talks to the back-end on-premises with all the SAP connectors and the main employee information and so forth. Everything else is running on Azure. During these two times of the year, they go expand the front end quite a bit. All the front end, the SQL Azure pieces, and some of the business logic, they expand the number of machines quite a bit. And then come September or so, they're going to shrink it down. The app is running 24/7 every day, by the way. You know that. There's always something to be changed. But the peak is just these two times of the year. There's a video on TechNet. There's a link in the presentation if you want to see more of the developers speaking about their experience. And there's a case study as well on Microsoft websites. Follow TechNet links if you want. I'm going to show you another one. This is actually part of volume licensing for Microsoft. This is actually really mission critical. I mean, the first one is very important for evaluations and HR and so forth. This is mission critical. This is part of the tool chain that is used by our salespeople, by our field, to actually get us paid. So this is money, you guys. If this thing is down, Microsoft is not getting paid. So this is mission critical. It's not all of the volume licensing infrastructure we have. It's one particular module called BC Web for business quote, I believe. I forgot to be honest. But it's basically part of the chain that a salesperson has to go through to issue a quote and get paid, basically from a customer. So key to remember is mission critical. Secondly, again, as you see in a second, it ties into the back-end processing of enterprise ERP on-premises, basically. Yet we have to scale it as well. The company is growing. We have lots of people accessing the system. What do we do? The technologies used, you're probably very familiar with the list. So this is sort of the end picture, not the previous picture. You have Windows Azure service running in the cloud with a number of SQL Azure databases, which I'll show in a second how they're synchronized with on-premises. There's a bit more services as well with business logic, if you will, accessing the same data. Note the left-hand side which says corporate access. This is single sign-on through ADFS to be able to log onto the application from within the corporate infrastructure. And then Service Bus is used to get to the on-premises applications. And a small shim was written on-premises to export WCF endpoints. Okay? So the connection points are straightforward, to be honest. It's you have service bus connectivity, and then you see in a second SQL Azure Sync. There's some information flowing there, and then a couple of things happening on the right-hand side here. First, backup is being done using SQL Sync between the two pieces. And secondly, actually, in this case, a bunch of jobs were done on-premises and remotely run over the data nightly in the public cloud. The points I want to tell you on this are a couple of things. The fact that this is mission critical is a big deal for us. You can slice and dice this problem anyways. And I'm doing a very quick go through this thing. The link, by the way, has a lot more details. So there's no cookbook for one solution that fits everybody. You'll find out that in some cases, the decision to do, for example, the way the data was partitioned here between on-premise and the cloud to be quite technical, could be a business decision, it could be maybe regulations or otherwise. So you need to be quite flexible when you are faced with these problems. Many people would love to have moved the whole thing to the cloud, by the way, but you end up with faced with also other issues. This is one module of many modules that are accessing the same data in the bottom side of the slide. So if you move the data to the cloud, what happens to other modules? You have to move them too. Maybe it's too expensive to move them from day one. So you have to split them. Where do you split them? You have to find the right boundaries in there. Some technical reasons why you may want to split this way has to do with protocol chattiness. A very chatty interface should not cross these lines. Okay? You add caching if you can. You find a different way to slice them, and so forth. Again, I encourage you to look at the link. There's a lot more information there as well. So let me switch a bit and talk about customer case studies. And again, these are documented as part of the case studies, but I have to admit, the documentation I found on a public website was more marketing oriented, so I'll speak to it if you want. But these are two big examples that we're also faced with the need to take existing infrastructure and extend it. In both cases, by the way, it had to do with devices. And we see this, by the way, we see it quite a bit. People have assets on premises, and they want to get them to their phones. They want to get them to their employees for the tablets and so forth. LexisNexis basically wanted to build a mobile version of an application they have. They have an app called Time Matters that's actually, I think, used by certain segments, industry, like lawyers and the like. So they still wanted to keep a bunch of stuff on premises, but they need to extend it and run things in the public cloud. But they were also, by the way, they had a number of business reasons why the data has to be split in such a way that some data does not flow to the cloud. And what they did was they built a system using technology you're very familiar with, I assume, ASP.NET, with web roles and worker roles and SQL Azure. The stuff we've had with SQL and Windows Azure for a while. And the big thing is they use Service Bus as a reliable messaging infrastructure to get between the disconnected devices, the cloud, and back to on-premises. And the way they slice and dice, the problem is they made sure certain data does not flow back to the cloud. So in the example, there are scenarios where the data may flow only between the device and the data when they are on-premises. Otherwise, control information flows to the cloud. And the case study has a bit more information about that as well. Another example is EasyJet. It's an airline in Europe. They have a very interesting business model, which effectively makes them motivated to do as much of the infrastructure for plane seat reservations, boarding, and so forth themselves. They have to go and pay the third-party vendors, if you will. So they have built the system, and now they wanted to be able to, even for their agents in airports, to use devices to do stuff. Otherwise, they have to go rent these fancy terminals. You know, when you go to the airport and you find these terminals, they're actually kind of expensive. You rent them from some airlines. EasyJet want to bypass that. So they want to have their own devices, if you will. And they also want to do it without depending on the local airports changing their firewalls and talking to every IT department, every location where they might use this thing. So use Service Bus for that. Basically, they create a virtual overlay messaging system using Service Bus. Exported all the services they want to endpoints in the cloud, hackled them securely, and made sure the device can go get to them. And again, please look at the case study. I personally spoke with the architect of the team. It's quite impressive what they have done. And the tooling, again, is frankly, it exists. The cloud is there. The connectivity solution like service bus is there. You need some imagination and define the problem very clearly. Guys, I'm almost done because I've been talking quickly. So what have we feedback we've received? And I guess I'm showing you the good and the bad here, just to impress on you that we are not done working on this thing. Many of our customers, MSIT and others, told us the following. Stuff that so far have been working well include, they like the fact that you get consistent and managed OS environment with Windows Azure. This is particularly true if you stick to the past or model of things. You don't have to worry about the OS and patching and so forth. Follow the rules and things happen for you. Time and again, people told us that. They like the ability to leverage existing code, existing web projects, and modifying them as needed to move to the cloud. By and large, what I hear, existing expertise does transfer. Some pieces of code you may have modified them a bit and the like, but by and large, people like that part. Spinning up new environments for testing, staging, production is really very simple. Yes, we have to improve deployment time in a second, but you don't have to talk to anybody about this stuff. If you have the appropriate accounts and the like, you can go and experiment very quickly. And you can stand up services very quickly as well. And again, guys, I'm giving you the unvarnished feedback we're hearing from customers. They like worker roles in particular because they're flexible. And as you saw, multiple examples of service bus being used for connectivity between existing application components. With VNet, we may get a bit of shift of some scenarios to more of a VNet scenario, but they're really both very useful depending where you are in the stack. Now, what is it needs improvement? And sometimes they really were very adamant that it needs improvement. We need to do a better job with the management interfaces of the platform, especially from an IT perspective. I showed you an example of App Controller System Center, which actually helps in that front. I know we need to do more. For those of you who come from a bigger shops, you know what I'm talking about here. If you're a one or two person operation, you're probably just okay with the live ID we give you today. If you're a big shop, you probably want to have proper role-based access control, auditing and so forth of actions against the cloud. So this is what the bullet we keep hearing from people say that. Deployment time needs improvement. We know that. We've actually improved it. This has to do with VM startup time and so forth. And typically the pushback we get has to do with the dev test cycle versus the production cycle. Okay. Monitoring continues to be an area where people want more. And we heard the feedback loud and clear. Catch me offline if you want more to know more about this stuff, but it's people always want to be able to see and understand the health of the system more. And you know why, I guess. You know, we put stuff in the cloud, it's away from you in a sense. Everybody wants side-to-side secure connectivity. And I'm glad to say we definitely have it. If I gave you this talk last week, I could not talk about virtual nets. That was perhaps the number one request for many of those folks. And you know, as I mentioned, Connect was useful, but this is really the proper solution. Lastly, we still lack enterprise-ready samples and documentation. And we know where we're going to work on this, so stay tuned, please. We have a lot of data which we know one-on-one with customer interactions. We have many partners who've been using the system and have information. We're planning to collect and publish information, hopefully in the next few months. Okay, guys, I'm done. I've been talking quickly, and I know it's the end of the day here. So let's take questions, and if you want to leave the room, please, it's okay with me. Please go ahead.
So now that site-to-site connectivity exists, service bus is an option. Do you anticipate it'll be used as frequently as it is today, or is the more likely scenario configure once and continue to use site-to-site for all the different ways to connect between the enterprise and the cloud?
So the question for the sake of, I think we recorded is, how will the usage pattern for service bus change? Now we have virtual net. Do note, service bus is a number of things. It's durable queuing, PopSub, and the connectivity piece. I don't know the exact answer to the question, but we'll see what happens. My personal opinion is that durable messaging, queuing, and PubSub are needed anyway.
Sure.
Even if you're on the same network, if you want.
I'm particularly talking about the relay.
The relay usage may go down. Okay. They may go down because if you set up a VNet for other reasons, you get it. Okay. But do note, some customers don't want to go muck around or worry about VPNs and talking to their local VPN guru and so forth, for which case the relay would be very useful. But my gut feel is you'll see more on the messaging part, on the queuing part, on the PubSub part, and layering will be there, and connectivity will be there, but VNet will do more, really low-level network connectivity.
Is there a performance difference between using the VNet for message communications or using the service bus?
Short answer, it depends. I'm sorry, I'm an engineer. It's hard to give you a concrete answer. It honestly depends. I mean, the VPN solution is truly a VPN solution. It's quite performant at the network level. But to answer the question, you have to look at the actual stack in question. Are you calling WCF? Are you going to, you know? So please measure it and tell me. I'll be happy to take the feedback back. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Yes.
A question about SQL Azure Data Sync. How granular can that be? I think I saw in a presentation this morning that you can restrict the fields of your tables, but it wasn't clear that you could restrict the rows based on a query.
It's built on a framework, on the old sync framework, which is quite flexible. The actual service is less flexible than the framework which is built. So the specific question, I'll take it offline.
Okay.
And I'll find you the exact person who knows the stuff. And if you can pass by a TLC down there, we have it staffed by a SQL Azure expert as well. Yeah. Yes, please. Question is, can it be used for SharePoint database? It's really for any SQL database. Okay. Now, you do know that it's not the best to get a consistent snapshot of a database. For that, we actually recommend a backup out of SQL into something else like a blob and then synchronize it or copy it somewhere else. And we have a white paper on that. Yes?
Can I link multiple sites to a single Azure environment? So if I do business with a third party, can both of us be site-to-site connected to the same Azure environment?
Through VNet? Not yet, to my knowledge. But that's not yet.
Okay.
But it's a request we are getting.
Okay.
So you can do it today with Connect, by the way.
Sure.
Okay. But for the gateway-based solution, it's a request we're getting. I suspect it should be there eventually.
Okay.
I'm not saying we're saying when, because actually I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, guys, thank you very much. I'll be around if you need me.